Hi, thank you for joining us today for Destigmatizing Urology, an official podcast series from Urology Times. As we all know, stereotypes and misleading information circulate within the field of urology, and these miscommunications can negatively affect doctor-patient counseling and decision-making. This series destigmatizes topics in urology alongside clinical experts to help listeners practice more efficiently and foster better relationships with their patients. I'm your host, Urology Times Assistant Editor, Janelle Hart. Today I'm speaking with Jay Seth, MD. He discusses urinary incontinence in male and female patients and how this condition can trigger major anxieties and avoidance behaviors. Seth is a consultant urological surgeon at St. George's University Hospital, London, UK. What are some of the stigmas surrounding incontinence for men and women?
I think with stigma, there's two main facets. One is what you think other people think of you, kind of perceived stigma. So the fear of what others are thinking of you. So if you've got urinary incontinence, what someone else may think of you, they see or identify that that's happening to you. And then also the self-stigma of what you think of yourself. So how you view yourself, or how you may prejudice yourself or see yourself as not a healthy person or someone who has a disability to some extent. And these symptoms can be disabling. So I think stigma largely comes to what others think of you and then what you think of yourself. And generally, a lot of the examination that's been done into this already explores anxieties. And then there's a lot of anxieties that patients will have with regards to this. So anxieties of having incontinence in public or in a public place, other people seeing that, being worried about smelling of urine and other people being able to smell urine on you, which is a concern that a lot of patients report and certainly in surveys. Anxiety of going to a new place and not knowing where the toilets are. So you can't map out your journey. You lose complete control in that particular journey because you don't know where the toilets are. You've now lost control of that entire trip or that outing. So people may avoid new places because they don't quite know where their opportunities are to use the toilet. And then also the thing of being unable to continue or start a sexual relationship or an intimate relationship with someone because they're worried about the event of incontinence during that episode of activity. And so that can also then lead to isolation or relationship breakdown or barriers. So these are all quite sad and distressing stigmas that a lot of patients may carry with them. Embarrassment and shame, unable to stay at friends' houses or family's houses, avoidance of long journeys. And so some studies have looked into stigma, but a lot more needs to be done to look at the barriers for how patients can overcome this.
And how do the stigmas surrounding incontinence affect treatment of incontinence? So is incontinence more severe because patients are delaying care out of fear or embarrassment?
Yes, so with regards to stigma and affecting the patient's treatments, first of all, in terms of the incontinence or physically, how the stigmas may affect someone physically, that if you delay treatment, it tends to be that when you see patients, they tend to say, look, I've been managing by not drinking water. I haven't drunk water. I don't hydrate myself because if I drink, I need to wee. Or if I drink, I may leak urine. So the avoidance of water is quite a dangerous behavior or coping mechanism because then that can cause urinary infections, which in turn may worsen the incontinence episodes. That can cause renal issues and a whole host of cardiovascular issues. The other thing is that the stigmas lead to a lot of avoidance behaviors. So people may avoid the triggers, which are laughing, dancing, exercising. So it's very restrictive and can very, very much be restrictive on their physical outlook. And if they stop exercising, clearly that can affect weight gain, the cardiovascular effects of that. And then clearly the more severe end cases, if someone's constantly wearing continence pads and wet pads, that can cause skin problems, skin breakdown, and then also that cycle of occurring infections. So physically, the stigmas can have a big knock-on effect. And then psychologically, which come along with that, are the unpleasant feelings, depression, anxiety, feeling helpless, social isolation. People commonly say that they don't travel because they've got to take lots of suitcases full of pads with them. And also massive impact is if patients feel that they can't work, they can't earn, they can't go to work, then they have to give up their job or amend their job to a certain extent, which then affects them economically. And then the cost of all the pads, the cost of buying all of the containment products, pads, liners, which come at a cost, and that also can significantly stress them. So clearly you can imagine how restrictive this is.
So what would you say is the urologist's role in destigmatizing incontinence?
As healthcare professionals, we've got a really important, incredibly important role and responsibility with regards to increasing awareness and education, and then really trying to address the barriers and bring down the barriers. And I think we need to talk openly about it with not only as medical groups, but also with patients and patient forums, and really nail down the message that this is potentially a normal part of aging. This is normal. This is common. This is very prevalent. It affects all age groups, children, young people, could be young women who have had children, middle-aged people who may have some neurological conditions, senior men who have got enlarged prostates, a whole host of patients, men and women, across all age groups. And ensuring that patients don't feel that they're alone in this and that this is prevalent. It affects everyone. It affects regular people. It affects famous people. It will affect across all ages. So a lot of medical research and effort goes into treatments, diagnosing what causes this, and then also the treatments and advancements that are being made. Treatments are getting more and more effective, and they're getting less and less invasive and less intrusive. So I think it's getting those messages out there. For example, the International Continence Society is a global society and reflects a massive global effort and the coming together of scientists, doctors, nurses, physiotherapists, pharmacologists to come together to produce outcomes in this field. So I think it's just addressing education, awareness, and talking openly between primary care, secondary care, that's primary care physicians, family physicians, and then specialists as well, and then coming into patient forums, gyms, personal trainers. I've had patients or personal trainers say that a lot of the people that they work with are not exercising at all or avoiding exercising because of the concerns. I think there is a lot to do, but we're in a strong position to be having those conversations now.
Last, Dr. Seth, is there anything else that our audience should know about this topic?
With regards to healthcare moving forwards, as much as we can do in the prevention realm, we need to really be doing, and that is education about the right type of fluids, avoidance of the triggers like caffeine, lots of sugary drinks, fizzy drinks, Coke, Diet Coke, orange juice, lemonade, coffee. We're not saying cut it out altogether, but it's just having an awareness of what you're drinking. With regards to work in the community and prevention, weight loss, physiotherapy, pelvic floor physiotherapy. And then if patients have these symptoms, it's being aware that there are experts out there who have an interest in assessing and supporting these patients. So whether that's continence nurses, physiotherapists, urologists, urogynecologists, elderly care physicians who have an interest in continence, there is a community of healthcare professional out there, and it's basically getting to them to discuss the options. Patients need to be able to hear the options, hear what is available, what support is available. And many patients don't access that. And that's purely because of either lack of awareness, they just are unaware that these options are available, or that those sad feelings of embarrassment, and they don't want to talk about it. So those are the things that we need to tackle. Quite passionate about getting the message out, because when I see patients, they've been suffering for a long time and they didn't know that there was any support available. And, you know, their lives have been on hold maybe for a strong period of their life because of it. It's just awareness. It's just getting the message out. And I think we're doing that well now with regards to openly talking about diversity and mental health. This is a good time to do this now.
Be sure to subscribe to Destigmatizing Urology on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or other apps. You can get the latest clinical perspectives and practice management advice by visiting www.urologytimes.com. Thank you for listening.